Welcome, everybody, to Season 2 of the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm talking with beat reporter Charles Gardner, who covered Media Day together with me on Monday. We're recording this on Tuesday, and now Charles is up in Madison for training camp. So, Charles, it's good to be back for Season 2.
Yeah, it's here already, Matt, and we're ready to go. I was talking to someone today, and I said there's actually a game next Monday in Chicago, so that's going to be coming up quickly. A preseason game only, of course, but it will be the first action of this new Bucks team. They're up here in Madison all week working out, and they were up here last year, and this will probably be the last year that they do this because their new training facility should be ready by next fall in downtown Milwaukee.
Yeah, so that'll be a little bit of a shift for them, you know, moving to that new facility after these 2 years in Madison. But when it comes to Madison and the podcast today, let's focus on the start of training camp, at least at the beginning. We'll touch on a whole bunch of things since we haven't podcasted in a little while. You know, the summer's a little bit of a drier time, and getting times where both of us are together and able to talk about the Bucks. You know, that's like the off season for both of us, considering what we do. And so, you know, we'll get back to some of that summer stuff later in the podcast, but we'll start with today and training camp. And I know you had the opportunity to talk to some guys that we talked to yesterday, but about different topics.
Yes, Matt, I tried to go around. I had a little time after practice ended. I think it was maybe a three-hour practice. They just had one longer session today. They're going to have two tomorrow, two Wednesday, and they split that up. We'll have media availability after the first session the next 2 days. But talk to Chris Middleton, who was actually at practice today. He's flying to New York, or he may be there already, Matt, as he's going to be preparing for his surgery tomorrow in New York. And Dr. David Altchek, who operated on Jabari Parker when he tore his left ACL in 2014, as we all remember, early in that 2014-15 season. He will be the surgeon as well. He's the Mets team doctor and well-known, very good surgeon, obviously. He's going to be doing the operation to repair Chris's torn left hamstring. And I was talking to Jamie Dimon today, who's one of the Bucks owners, and you know, we had just a nice conversation, and he was relaying to me that it is a tough injury to overcome. He actually had a similar injury after he was thrown from a horse.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, on his farm. And he said, obviously, he's older and not a NBA basketball player. And he said it didn't result for him that he would have to have an operation to repair it. But for Chris Middleton, who's 25, and trying to guard the LeBron Jameses of the world, you know, it has to be absolutely 100%. That's why, obviously, Chris needs a surgery, and the Bucks are going to do everything to make it happen. And Chris said to me today, is interesting, there will be some serious downtime after the surgery. And he said he actually won't be able to really move or do anything much for the first 2 weeks after the surgery. So he's going back to South Carolina to his home. And he said he'll be back in Milwaukee when he can actually move around a little bit, get around. And I kind of joked with him, asked him what he was going to do. Is he going to watch, you know, football or the NFL, or what's he going to do? And he said, yeah, he didn't really have a plan for that, but he's going to figure out some videos and some video games to watch for a few weeks down in South Carolina. So I think everybody's best wishes are with Chris. You know him, Matt. He's just he's a very genuine person, and we've all got to know him over the last few years since he came to the Bucks in that trade with the Detroit Pistons. And so we all wish the best for him, and just kind of a freakish thing that happened. And the Bucks are going to have to figure out how to get along, as we wrote today, without him. And I'm sure that's going to be a process. I talked to Rashad Vaughn, who took Chris's spot in the starting unit for the opening day of practice. And the interesting thing about Rashad is, Chris calls him his little brother, quote unquote, and they are very close. And I remember in Las Vegas this summer that Chris was texting Rashad and offering him encouragement and telling him, you know, giving him some advice. And so now here you have Rashad in this point. And Rashad was very strong in saying, look, I don't have anything cemented here. I'm just in there right now because that spot is open. And he recognizes that that's not necessarily something that's going to be that way, even at the start of the season or through camp. And Coach Kidd said today there would be a lot of changes. He said the jersey colors will change, he told all the players throughout camp, even though yesterday, as you know and as you reported, he was going to have Miles Plumlee and Rashad Vaughn in with the other three that we expected would be in that starting unit, which was Jabari Parker, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, and going back to Chris Middleton, yeah, I saw your story about, you know, with Chris's quote before we started podcasting about saying how, you know, he's going to try and watch some TV shows and catch up on some of that and play some video games. And my first thought was like, man, like that's the life. That's great. But
that sounds good, right?
Yeah, I would love to have, like, you know, multiple weeks to catch up on all the shows that I just ignore, you know, because I don't have the time for them. And video games, great. But for Chris, like,
He's going to be in pain.
He's going to be in pain, and he's going to be missing being on the court. I mean, that's not who he is. He's the kind of person who spends a lot of time at the facility, you know, playing basketball, traveling, you know, over the summer to Florida and California and South Carolina, playing basketball the whole time. And so, you know, he's really intent on that and really focused on getting back. So, you know, I know that'll be a difficult transition for him. And you and I were talking about yesterday when it comes to Rashad Vaughn that he seems, especially if you kind of get the pulse of Bucks fans, he seems like an unlikely candidate to be starting. He was up and down last season, literally going to the D League, you know, for a stretch.
Yes.
There.
Yes, you know, he went to Canton, remember, in March. Yes.
Right, and when he was up in the NBA, there weren't too many things that he did where you said, oh, wow, like that's really great. You know, he had an occasional game where he would make a three-pointer or two, or, you know, I remember in the Phoenix game where, you know, you could see the differences between him and Devin Booker, where he was playing pretty well on defense and Booker was, you know, lights out on offense, you know, and you can kind of draw the parallels. And then Summer League happened this year, and, you know, I know he had that bruise or that something on his hand.
Yes.
You know, and so that affected his shot, but he still took a lot of shots and didn't make too many of them. Didn't leave a great impression overall, you know, with his summer league experience. And so, you know, you and I were talking about it, and like, okay, well, this isn't really a likely scenario. But when it comes to replacing Chris Middleton, which obviously the Bucks can't do with one guy, who else are they going to put in that starting lineup? I mean, I think the options are, you know, play MCW and Dellavedova together. Well, then that comes at the detriment of the second unit, and we don't know how that combination would fit. You know, do you play, you know, Jason Terry? And maybe you play Jason Terry in the starting lineup. You know, he's done that, played that role for, you know, a countless number of teams since he's been all around the league. He's come off the bench, he's started, he's done it all, you know, but at his age, you know, is that something that you can do for a full season? You know, could you go really big and play, you know, with somebody like, I don't know, Steve Novak or Teletovic or, yeah, somebody like that? It's just hard. There's not too many guards and different players you can mix into that starting lineup that fit the way, in an ideal way, for the Bucks.
No, the internal options don't appear to be there. And so you wonder if at, you know, my thought is at some point the Bucks will probably look to make a trade or make some kind of move. You got to think when you're losing a player of Middleton's caliber. So I think they don't want to panic. They don't want to show, oh, we got to go do something right now. They're going to see how this goes in camp. They do have some players who could play the position, but on a long-term basis, I think we're going to have to wait and see you know, what is the solution there? They do have more playmakers. They've got Dellavedova, MCW. But as you said, Matt, they want this second unit to be strong. And I think Jason Kidd is just adamant that he's going to get a good bench back the way he had his first year as coach here when they had one of the more productive bench units in the league. And it went just all the way to the bottom last year, as we know. And it was a real detriment. And I think that is one of the reasons he talked about having MCW and Greg Monro come off the bench. Now he has Teletovic, he has Jason Terry, he has, you know, Steve Novak, Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
Jason talked about Beasley today and said he looked great. So, you know, maybe Beasley's an option to play some more minutes. So it's going to be very interesting. Yeah, Jason talked about Beasley. He specifically remarked about him after the opening practice. He also talked about Monro, and Michael Carter Williams said they were very vocal in their play with their unit. So he's obviously, you know, looking to see what the reactions of players are and how they're all coming together. But he certainly wants that bench unit to be to be a factor again, and it'll be interesting. I think it'll be something that we follow throughout training camps.
Yeah, and you mentioned the possibility of a trade, and since, you know, Middleton wouldn't qualify for a disabled player exemption, you know, you're down to a roster of basically 14 guys, and there aren't too many movable pieces in terms of a trade, you know, that would bring a net positive back. And you know, it's hard to name more than a handful of guys who the Bucks would even consider moving, you know, or that teams would want.
Yeah, it could be difficult, and that's why I think it's just they had constructed this team in the summer. I think Wes Edens said it yesterday, the Bucks owner. He said, well, we just thought we had a great summer, and then this thing happened. You know, I think he called it a freak play happened where Chris slipped on the wet spot and, you know, went down. So they had it all lined up, and I don't think you can, you know, underestimate how big Chris was in that plan. He's just, as everybody said yesterday, and it's kind of going into what happened yesterday, but everyone was saying, look, you know, that's Michael Carter Williams said, you have to be real. You know, this makes a big change in our team, and there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and so, you know, we can kind of get back into yesterday and today a little bit, because I know you talked to Miles Plumlee more today about the possibility and the current situation of him being penciled into the starting lineup, at least at the outset of training camp.
Yeah, talked to Miles after practice today, and he was kind of the spokesperson for practice for me. I just wondered how everything went, and he just thought, you know, it was a really good session. They obviously worked them hard, because Jason talked afterwards about fatigue setting in, and of course that's what they want at the end of that first day of practice. But Miles has said he's, I guess one of the interesting things he said, Matt, is that he just loves the passing. He said now, he said the ball's flying all over. We have Deli. He said we have MCW. We have Giannis. And he's talking about more passing, you know, the ball moving faster and a more up-tempo style. And, of course, that fits his game where he can run the floor. And I was talking to him about him getting in shape for the season, and he said, yeah, I'm in pretty good shape. He said, but honestly, I could be in better shape. So that's – and, you know, Greg Monro said the same to us on Monday on Monday when we talked to him at Media Day. You know, it's obvious he's lost some weight and he's running better, and but he said he went – kind of tweaked his diet, or actually made a significant change, he felt, and he felt that's helped his body. So he knew he was trying to get ready also for getting up and down the court, which might not be his game quite as much as Miles, but when he's in there, he's going to be in there with Giannis and Jabari too. So he's, you know, he wants to be ready. And he had talked about that as well. But I think, you know, it's significant that Jason Kidd is giving Plumlee the first chance. It's not too surprising to me because obviously the Bucks really targeted him to return with that 4-year, $50 million contract. And if you had said this halfway through last season, you would have laughed at that.
Oh, absolutely.
He wasn't even playing.
So. No, he wasn't doing anything. I mean, even with the amount he played near the end of the season, he still only averaged like 14 minutes a game, which tells you how little he was playing earlier in the season.
Yes, I wrote that in the story today. I said 14 minutes a game, and I actually asked him. I said, how do you prepare for a season where you're going to be playing maybe 30? I didn't throw a number out there, but, you know, maybe 30 minutes a game, certainly significantly more minutes. And he said he's been working at that all summer. And if you go back and look at the stats, there's one season in his career that he did start 79 games out of 80 appearances his second year with the Phoenix Suns, and he was the starting center. And he said, yes, it's a very different thing. You know, and he said he remembered, you know, that team would get up and down the floor. And he said, you know, you have to be in better shape. So that's something that he's very aware of, and he's been working toward all summer.
Yeah, as a tangent, that Suns team that he played on, they were all young. They were all playing really fast. They looked like they were up and coming, and then boom, they just exploded. The team went in all different directions. They traded a bunch of guys and never came to fruition.
Remember when they made the trade with the Bucks? Like how many guys were getting on the bus? Remember they were all getting on the bus? That was the funniest part of that story. And they like took Miles and Tyler Ennis off the bus. They were going to their next game or wherever they're going. They pulled them off the bus. So that makes me think of that. All different directions, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Just shows you how quickly in the NBA, you know, a team can look like they're on the rise and then suddenly just you know, fall back to the bottom again, really. I mean, it's, you know, and that's obviously for a whole different podcast. We'll have to pull in some Suns guys for that. But
right.
That's just the first thing I thought of when you think of that season with Plumlee playing a lot, because he, so, you know, kind of made himself look like an up-and-coming player on this up-and-coming team.
Right, and then the next year they had drafted and they had changed their roster, and he played very little, I think, even the following year. Yeah. He was on the bench, and that was 14-15 when he got traded to the Bucks in that deal with Carter Williams and Tyler Ennis for Brandon Knight.
Yeah. So anything else you want to touch on from today at training camp before we move on to our next topic?
Yeah, no, I think that was pretty much the highlights from today at camp. You know, there was a lot of the Madison reporters obviously there speaking to different players. And, you know, they will be playing a preseason game up here in Madison again, as they did last year. They got a very warm reception, as you remember, Matt, here last year. And they will be playing Dallas, I believe it is, on October 8th. It'll be the second exhibition game after they play the Bulls next Monday.
All right. So, yeah, so we'll move on. We'll move off the court for a little bit, you know, in the later in the podcast for everybody else who is trying to figure out where we're going with this. We'll talk about Giannis and his extension and what he means to the team, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the new guys to the team, and maybe we'll hit a couple over-unders, you know, and take our stabs at a couple different things. But for now, let's look off the court. I wrote a story today. It'll be in the paper tomorrow on Wednesday about Jabari Parker and his activities off the court and his use of his voice and his platform as a professional athlete to talk about social justice and gun violence in Chicago and you know, racial injustice and just as a goal of raising awareness for different causes over the summer. And Charles, I'm interested to hear about your thoughts about what we heard Jabari say at Media Day on Monday and the activities that he's been involved in this summer.
I thought he was very passionate about it and very, very well-spoken, very eloquent, really, about it. He talked about Colin Kaepernick, as almost everyone has in the last few weeks. And, of course, athletes have been asked about Kaepernick and their reactions. And Giannis said, hey, I just think he brought a lot of awareness to the issue, and he's very appreciative of that. And he said, I might not do the same thing, but, you know, he just said that he supported Colin, and he liked what he had done. He mentioned that he was from Milwaukee, you know, and that he took an interest in that. And but I think he thought that Colin had brought a lot of awareness to the issue by this stand that he took. I guess the first time he did it was in that preseason game with the Green Bay Packers, actually, when, you know, he took the stand and did not stand for the national anthem. So I think this is an issue you're going to be seeing. You wrote about it, the Bucs saying that, you know, they're supporting their players and wanting to express themselves about the issue. And you wrote that there is an NBA protocol that's different than the NFL protocol, correct?
Right.
You know, what can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, the NBA has a rule in place that all players must stand for the national anthem. That's been in place. That wasn't just hastily thrown in now. You know, that's right. that's been on the books, and it hasn't been, you know, an issue for some time. So there's been, you know, kind of rumblings around the NBA wondering what players are going to do if they want to show their support to that cause. Will they defy the rule on the books and do something during the national anthem? Will they not? Will they do it in a different way? And what role will that take? Because undoubtedly, you know, I think it's pretty fair to say there will be players in the NBA who will want to show some form of solidarity and some form of protests during games. I think that's going to happen. I think there are players who I believe have said that, you know, or have said that they would at least consider it. And I know that, you know, when you look around the NBA, some of the most eloquent, you know, responses to this situation have come from coaches. Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, more recently, have, you know, gone on long, you know, not tangents, but they've spoken at length about this issue and how it affects them and affects their players and what they expect heading into the season. And if you haven't heard the comments from those two coaches, I'm not going to try and paraphrase them. You can go look them up. They're all around the internet. It's pretty easy to find. But when it comes to Jabari, if you followed him really at all, as he's come into the public consciousness, first at Duke and now here in Milwaukee, this shouldn't really be that much of a surprise. He's always been a deep thinker. He's always been someone who's been interested in social issues. I remember reading a story about him. I think it was in either Sports Illustrated or ESPN the magazine while he was at Duke, saying that he was really invested in his classes and reading everything he could, and especially, you know, Frederick Douglass and W.E.B. Du Bois, and kind of just learning about, you know, African American history and plenty of other topics too. And so he's always been someone who's been very in tune with that. And that all really came across very well, both in the things that he said on Monday at Media Day and in the things that he has written for the Players Tribune, including his essay about Chicago and growing up there and you know, being somewhat as used to as you can be, you know, a much higher level of crime and shootings and violence and, you know, a poor education system with dilapidated buildings and, you know, outdated books and all the different, you know, levels of inequality that he faced just from where he came from and just the different issues that he faced, you know, growing up on the South Side and knowing from a relatively young age that he wanted to make some kind of change and use whatever he had to give back to that community. And he also mentioned that he wants to, you know, help communities, you know, the community of Milwaukee and do whatever he can in whatever places that he can make an impact. And so, you know, he said he wasn't sure exactly what more he could do. I mean, yesterday at Media Day, he said that, you know, Kaepernick's protest has obviously been effective in the sense that it's created an incredible amount of awareness, and a lot of people are talking about situations and issues that hadn't been talked about. He doesn't know exactly what he'll do or what the best way to take a next step is, but he's said in multiple venues that he's willing to be part of that conversation and to try and take that next step. And one of the things that he has done is he had an event called Pick Up for Peace at Quest Multisport in Chicago back in August. Quest Multisport is where they hold the annual NBA Combine, and Charles and I have been there multiple times. Yeah. And when it comes to location, it is not in one of the best areas. It is an area where you see houses that are boarded up, and you see people kind of milling around the street in the middle of the day, and there are crossing guards at near every school, kind of on like hourly shifts, even while school is in session, kind of just keeping an eye out and having a neighborhood watch, because it's not a good or safe area. And so he invited people from that area and from anywhere who could, any place where they could get to that gym, were to have this basketball showcase with Chicago AAU teams, and a couple of professional players were there along with him, including Sean Marion and Patrick Beverly, the both Chicago related guys.
Both Chicago guys. I thought that was maybe the most interesting thing that Jabari said. I think someone asked him, what are you most proud of what you've done this summer? Because he appeared on ESPN as you write this story. He, you know, has done multiple things to speak out about violence. He's been on Twitter. He's used his voice. But somebody said, what is the thing you've been most proud about? And he instantly, didn't he, Matt? He instantly mentioned that tournament or event at the Quest Multisport. He said, well, I think that has to be it, because that affected people from the community that could come and play basketball and meet these players. And I just thought that was tremendous. That was really, you know, he said, what made a difference? That was what made a difference.
Yeah, and he said it was just 3 hours, but it was 3 hours away from the streets, and it was using what he's good at. He's good at basketball. He's good at bringing people together for basketball.
That's what he said.
And so that's his draw. That's how he can help. And I'm sure, you know, he's 21 years old, and I'm sure that can change over time and grow and blossom into different things. But for right now, that's something that he tangibly can do.
Yeah, and I recall that last year in Milwaukee, the one thing he did was serve as a spokesman for this attendance program, Milwaukee Public Schools. And I think that also was really admirable thing, was he was showing up at schools and he was trying to kind of lead or help lead the program to increase attendance and telling kids how important it was to be in school, which is also a big part of all this, so that kids aren't dropping out of school. But I think you just see his sincerity. You see how much he wants to make a difference. You're quoting your story about how he has Malcolm X and Martin Luther King as role models, and he wants to be a leader in the current day civil rights movement. It was very inspiring, I think, when you hear it. And I think a tremendous story, Matt, that you did, and I hope a lot of people will read it online. It's been online today, or, you know, pick up the newspaper on Wednesday, and I'm sure they're going to see that story. So a tremendous job there, and I think very interesting showing this side of Jabari. We often talk about his exploits on the basketball court, but it's good to talk about some of these other things that are so important to the community and to him.
Yeah, and also in that story, you know, further down, which kind of dovetails into what you wrote about today, was last week Peter Fagan, which, you know, was something that it hadn't really caught attention until, you know, probably yesterday. But Peter Fagan said last week at a meeting of the Rotary Club of Madison, you know, he said that, you know, Milwaukee is the most segregated, racist place he's ever experienced in his life. It's a place that is a place that is antiquated. It is in desperate need of repair and has happened for a long, long time. One of our messages and one of our goals, that him, them being the Bucks, is to lead by example. And so, you know, this is obviously a very powerful statement and a very impactful statement, you know, with Fagan in the context of talking about trying to build the arena while also embracing the community and making a positive impact on the community. And that was kind of his take. You kind of did some reporting on that today as kind of a follow-up. What did you hear during your reporting today?
Well, I talked to Wes Edens, who was up here in Madison for the start of camp, and asked him a few questions about that. And he said that Peter really, he said, maybe there were some better words to choose. In other words, I think, and you saw that Peter Fagan released a statement walking back those comments and kind of, you know, saying, well, this isn't quite what I meant, because it was inflammatory and saying, you know, Milwaukee is a racist place, and I'm not sure that Bucks officials are you know, happy with those kind of comments. Certainly there is poverty, there are these inequalities, and that's what Wes Edens said today. He said, I think he was trying to get at the inequalities that exist in the community. And he said, we want to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, was really what Wes was saying today. And of course, the Bucks have tried to work with community groups in building the arena. One thing that Wes said today was, it's not just about the construction of the arena. He said, you're going to see that in the next 2 years. But he said, we want to make this a better place, you know, in the long term, when the arena is built. And one thing I thought was interesting, he talked about the LA Live, you know, because there is a concern, are the Bucks really helping the wider community, or is it just this downtown district where the arena will be built? And, you know, Wes said, hey, he's talking about the jobs that will be created during the construction, and then hopefully beyond that as well. One thing he said was about that downtown district. He believes it can be revitalizing for the entire city. He talked about LA Live, which, you know, I'm familiar with the area around the Staples Center in Los Angeles, which was a kind of a tough area and just not a place. You know, downtown Los Angeles was not always the place to go, but they have put a lot of money into that area around the Staples Center, and it has become more of a destination. And I think the Bucks are hoping certainly that will happen with the downtown district and closing the street and all their plans that they have for the new arena. And of course, there's a lot of activity, if you've been downtown lately, in that area with the training facility going up and starting in, you know, I was there recently, and there's a lot of activity there, and also with the start of the arena. And he said, in 2 years' time, you're going to see a lot of changes. And he said, I hope in 5 years' time. So, yeah, I think it's with some controversial comments, and we'll see kind of where it goes from here. But the Bucks, I think, certainly want to be part of the solution. That's what he's saying. I asked if they are having meetings or planning things that where they can help the broader community more than they even have already. And he said those are ongoing, but he pointed to their efforts that they've had already in the community and with the job force. And, you know, I think the Bucks are, Mayor Barrett spoke today and said, you know, that the Bucks have been willing partners with him in trying to make the community better, and he wants to keep working with them.
Yeah, so I think we covered the bases on that topic for now. Obviously, there could be more developments in the future, but let's get back to the team and to the basketball court. You know, obviously, you'd have to be crazy not to expect that Giannis would get an extension. We all knew it was a when, not an if, because of, you know, how important he is to the franchise, you know, and obviously his deal is a big one, the biggest one the Bucks have ever given out, but he still left some money on the table, you know, about $6 million. You know, what were your takeaways from Giannis's extension, Charles?
Well, I thought it was really interesting. 4 years, $100 million. He did leave a little money out there, but when if you talk to his agent, Alex Tsiratsis, which we did, you got the very distinct impression that this was more than enough. You know, 4 years, $100 million, no options. You know, here's a player who came from Greece that had nothing, that had a dream to be in the NBA and made the dream come true. And the dream's still going. You know, somebody asked Giannis how close, somebody asked him today how close he was to being what he can be in the NBA. So I'm nowhere close. I'm not even near. Yeah. And I think that's the right answer. He isn't. He's only into, you know, his fourth year, and already he's made all these strides, and he's got people talking about him as a possible all-star or all-defense first team. Jason Terry said that he's capable of that when he was talking about him yesterday. So, but it's making that potential a reality. But obviously the Bucks see how much he's done, how much talent he has. Jason Kidd and the coaching staff have worked so hard with him, nurturing it, making him into a playmaker, making him a more central figure of the team. So I think it's interesting, though, you know, he didn't have this, oh, I have to have the max deal, I have to have this. No, he wanted a reason. His agent said, Giannis said, you come back with a figure and I'll tell you if it's okay. And when he came, somebody said $100 million is a pretty good round number. That figure was okay, I guess.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, I think the quote that I saw was like, yeah, that's fine. What are we talking about? Like, let's just go. $100 million, let's do it. Like, that's great. You know, but the other thing about that contract is that it leaves open the possibility to give Jabari Parker a 5-year deal, because each team can only have one designated player, you know, the guy coming off his rookie contract to get a 5-year extension. And
gives him some flexibility then.
And so Giannis not taking 5 years means that the Bucks can offer Jabari that 5-year option, which is huge, that no one else can offer that. You know, I don't think, I can't speak for Jabari and say that he has designs or ideas about leaving, you know, but no matter what, no one's going to be able to offer him more years and more money when the time comes.
Right. And that is important in today's NBA, you know, with teams. We've seen player movement during the past summer. So, I think that is important. And it's you always wonder, like, can they make this work if Jabari and Giannis really both fulfill their potential and start filling it? Or, you know, if they both take a huge leap this year, then there's still the potential that they're still both going to be on the Milwaukee Bucks. And I think that obviously Giannis is. He's under contract. So that is very important. And they've been talking about building this young team. They obviously locked Chris up with the 5-year $70 million. So would be part of their future. Unfortunately, now in the second year of that contract, he's not going to be playing. You know, this is part of the NBA with staying healthy and players that are on these bigger contracts. But when you look at Chris's contract now, it looks pretty reasonable. It's just so unfortunate, you know, given the contracts that were given out in the NBA this summer, the 5 years, 17 or 70 million, you know, is a reasonable number. But it's just so unfortunate then when he really is not going to be able to play this year. He still is one of your highest paid players this season. I believe he's the second highest paid behind Monroe.
Yeah, and when you look at Chris Middleton's contract, I mean, that's a heck of a deal. I mean, John Hammond got Giannis for less than the max. He got Chris Middleton for less than the max. When if Middleton became a free agent 1 year later, you know, if it was this summer as opposed to last summer, I mean, he could have easily, you know, pulled probably Giannis money. I mean, really. I mean, with the amount of money that was getting thrown around to the caliber of players that
he certainly could have been in that ballpark, yeah.
Oh, sure. And yeah. So then the Bucks would have lost him, but they got him the year before. They got him at a rate that looked big then, but based off the where the cap was going, doesn't look that bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I mean, he's only earning a little bit more than Miles Plumlee. Which, in terms of how important, nothing against Miles Plumlee, obviously he could be starting, but in terms of his importance to the team, he is a definitely more integral part of the team and less replaceable than Plumlee is. And that's
we've been talking about Chris, you know, for a week now or ever since the injury about his impact and importance to the team. And, you know, it was interesting to hear all the players finally react at the media day on Monday. And as I wrote, you know, I didn't hear anyone say, oh, we can just replace Chris. Nobody said that. Everybody realizes that's not possible. The one thing I think you do think about, or I thought about yesterday, was remember when Jabari went down and everybody thought, oh, the Bucks are going to be done. They're toast, you know, and that was Kidd's first year. And the fact was they went on and had a good season without Jabari. Could they do that again without Chris? I think that's the test. But remember what it took that season. It was that type of chemistry. They had Zaza, they had Dudley. So can they bring that type of chemistry back? And that's what it takes to overcome a key player's injury. Of course, at the time, Jabari was a rookie and he was still learning, but he was a big part of the team, no doubt.
And I think that, you know, their locker room has a chance to be more similar to that, you know, that playoff season a couple of years ago compared to last season.
I
think the characters in there, the veterans in there, I think that you'll have a better atmosphere. Not that last year's atmosphere was bad or, you know, by any means, but it wasn't as good as the previous year by any stretch of the imagination.
No. And lost those leaders. And Dudley and Pachulia. I think they have Jason Terry, who's looks like he's going to step in and be a leader and be a veteran that the others respect, the younger players respect, and that's important. Even having Dellavedova, even though he's a young player,
he's got a ring,
right? He's played on a world championship team. He played in the finals the last 2 years.
And guys are already asking him about it. They're asking about, you know.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
What it feels like to play in those games.
Giannis is asking him what it's like to, what would LeBron do? And, you know, and actually, Dele might know. So
I would hope he knows.
Right. So I think that's all a part of this new mix, and it will be real interesting to see how it works. You got Mirza Teletovic, who played many years, as he pointed out yesterday, he's played a lot of years in Europe. He also played for Kidd in Brooklyn. He's got experience in basketball way beyond what a lot of the players had last year. So you've got some of those veterans, and I think that's important.
Yeah, so speaking of some of the new guys, let's go rapid fire. I'm going to ask you about each of the new six guys.
Okay. This is trouble.
I just want you to give me your initial impressions, okay?
All right. And
we'll make it easy. We'll start with Michael Beasley.
Yeah, well, Beasley, I mean, just you got to love this guy who yesterday said on Monday he was asked about his experience in China. And he said, well, I was in Shanghai first. And he said, that's not really China.
Yeah. And he said that was a good thing.
Yeah, and he said that was good. He said when he came back, he went to like the real China. He said, so Shanghai is not China. He wanted everyone to understand. And you got to love his enthusiasm. Obviously, he's had a very interesting NBA career. We can go into more of that later. But I think very, very positive, and he can score. What did he tell you, Matt, about the bins? Or I asked him something about if he was a natural scorer, and what did he say?
He said, "Oh yeah, you know, God gave it to me when I was two. I put the things in the bins faster than all the other kids. You know, I just got a knack for putting things in a bucket."
He could put things in the bins or the hamper or whatever it might be, right? Yeah. So I just think, and you got this guy can score. You know, he scored 63 points in the I believe it was the Chinese Basketball Association All-Star game last year. And he averaged like over 30 points. Now this is in the Chinese league,
sure.
but the guy can score. He averaged 13 points a game in 20 games with the Rockets. You know, when he came back and played with them at the end of the year, kind of a dysfunctional Rockets team that actually did make the playoffs, though, somehow. You know, Jason Terry and Beasley were both on that team. So, you know, can they bring a little leadership? It'll be interesting to see. But the Rockets were changing. Hopefully these guys will be a good fit. But Beasley, very interesting. We'll see how he fits, but you know, a little different character, and that might be good for the Bucks. We're going to see.
Yeah, and I think the exact quote about Shanghai was, "Shanghai's a dope city, man."
So
if any of you guys are have money and you want to go travel and you want to take up Michael Beasley on going to Shanghai, let us know how it goes. The next guy who we can talk about is Jason Terry. You know, Michael Beasley's former teammate for 25 odd games last season.
For about 20 games, yeah. Jason Terry, I mean, I think you know, this guy, he, as Jason Kidd said yesterday, he said, "Oh, you learned he can talk." He said, he said he can talk your arm off. I think that's what he said. But he loves to talk. But I think you know, he's a hard worker. He has good habits. He was laughing about how he said he's always the first one to the gym, and he can't beat Giannis to the gym. He said, "I can't beat him to the gym in the morning. He's there before I get there." He's kind of upset about it, but he's actually very happy about it too, because he said that that's a good work ethic for this young guy. He's, you know, he said that's one battle I don't have to fight, you know, as far as getting these young guys to really work hard. But I think again, you know, what he told me when he first signed with the Bucks is that he always thought he would be with Kidd, maybe as an assistant coach or maybe as a player in this role at the end of his career, but being a leader in the locker room and you know, he knows Kidd so well. They played on the Mavericks 2011 NBA title team. So, and if he can be a factor as a player, even a little, you know, in a certain way, that will be great. And I think it's his 18th year in the NBA. So yeah, 18th season. So, it's going to be real fun, to be with Jason Terry this season, it sounds like.
Yeah, and on the court, I mean, Michael Beasley, you know, his experience with Terry was, hey, you know, you just plant him in the corner and just keep feeding him. He'll just make threes all day. He goes, you know, I want to just make him take 15 corner threes a game because it'll be great for us.
Right.
You know, so that's
right.
What Beasley was saying. And, you know, Terry's been around. He's played on really good teams, and that's the role he's played. He's been an energy guy, you know, who can be consistent and shoot the three and, you know, play at crunch time and do whatever the team needs him to do. And, you know, he said that his conversations with Jason Kidd are the same now as they were in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. And they're on the same plane, and they're really straightforward with each other. And I think he'll be a positive influence on the locker room. So let's move down the line in terms of these six new guys. And, you know, you've talked to Matthew Dellavedova a little bit more than the other guys because you saw him at the golf outing, and you've kind of – we've all been able to watch him since he was on the Australian Olympic
team. Yeah. Well, I just think it's such an intriguing new season for Dellavedova, who's played with LeBron, played in Cleveland. Obviously, he was a fan favorite there, gritty, guy to dive on the floor. And he was saying Monday that, you know, that's the way he plays. He's going to do that. And you know how the Milwaukee fans love a player who gets down and dirty, so to speak. And so you got to think there's going to be a love affair here the same way there was with the Cavaliers fans with Dellavedova. And he's going to have an expanded role. I think that'll be the interesting thing. How does he handle it? Can he grow and, you know, even improve on his three-point shooting, his offensive game? And how will Jason Kidd use him? But, you know, Jason Kidd loves the ball handlers and the guys that can make those type of plays. And so I think it's going to be real intriguing, real interesting to see, and especially how he plays with Giannis or without. You know, I think one thing that appealed to the Bucks about him was they felt he could play both ways. He can play and be the ball handler. Giannis is off the floor, or Giannis is in a little different role. But if Giannis is being the primary playmaker, they liked him because they thought that he could play in that role as well and hit some spot up threes and still be another good handler of the ball and a good defender. And so I think, yeah, very positive, very positive, I think. And we'll see, you know, there are players that, you know, he's been in controversial moments. We know, you know, if you're on the other team, you don't like him. He can get under people's skin, and maybe he takes a little over the line sometimes. So, he's going to play defense, and that's something the Bucks didn't have much of for a lot of last season.
Yeah, and in terms of offense, you know, he needs to prove that he can space the floor and offer a three-point shooting threat to open up driving lanes for Giannis and Jabari.
Because, no doubt.
Because if he can't do that, then he's basically, yeah, you know, just another version of MCW, which, you know, which isn't a terrible thing, but the reason why the Bucks like him is because he has shown that he can spread the floor.
He had the shooting ability.
And he is a threat. So, all right.
Yeah, it was 41% from three last year, which was 13th in the league.
So let's keep going on the list. We'll stick with the free agents or the non-rookies. We'll go to Mirza Cilinovic. You already touched on a little bit, saying that he's played for Kidd before and he has experience, and, you know, obviously he can shoot the three-point ball really well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, he played set an NBA record with Phoenix last year for threes off the bench by a reserve player. So, of course, people are going to know that. They're going to, when he's in the game, they're going to alter their defenses. But again, that may prove to the Bucks' advantage because they just packed in the lane the entirety of last season. Miles Plumlee told me today, he said, hey, we got some guys that can shoot out there, you know, and that's a switch from what we saw last year where everybody just packed it in on him and said, go ahead and shoot. We double dare you. So I think that's why he could be a big impact. And we know about the incident this summer for Bosnia for his national team where he got very, well, a teammate got angry with him and there were some words and he physically grabbed his teammate and then he didn't play the next game against Sweden. And it was a controversy, but asked Mirza about it yesterday and he said, that's not who he is basically. Isn't that what he said, Matt?
Yeah, and it was a one-off thing.
It was, and hopefully it was from the Bucks' standpoint that, you know, Jason Kidd said, didn't really say that it was something he was super concerned about, but it might be something that bears watching. I'm sure he's a very competitive player, and he was captain of that national team. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but, you know, again, he's had a lot of experience, as we discussed earlier, and I think he can be one of their big acquisitions simply because he provides something in volume. He's a volume three-point shooter. He's not just, you know, Bayless could make some – remember Jared Bayless last year, he made some threes, but he's not a guy out there that everybody's saying, oh, we got to stop him. He's a three-point shooter. No, this guy's a volume three-point shooter, and if he's making, you know, a high percentage, it's really going to help the team.
For the purpose of brevity, let's lump into the two rookies together. What are your initial thoughts about Thon Maker and Malcolm Brogdon?
Yeah, well, you know, just a lot to learn for both of them. And Thon sure, certainly is going to take some time. Remember, Coach Kidd said there's no pressure on him. He's a 10th overall pick. They picked him much as they picked Giannis in 2013. Young guy who has to learn the game. He has to learn so much. But he's long. He's physically gifted. He can shoot the three at I'm looking on my roster again, 7'1", right? Not 7 foot. So I have a 7 foot point guard and 7'1" forward in Thon Maker. But yeah, I think, a lot of upside. You probably won't see that much of it this season. It'll be interesting to watch the preseason because these guys will get a little time. And I think it'll be interesting the preseason to watch both Thon and Brogdon. Obviously Brogdon, speaking of him, you know, a lot of people in Wisconsin are interested in him, in part because he played for Tony Bennett at the University of Virginia, and Tony really helped cultivate his career, fifth-year senior, ACC Player of the Year. It's a big leap to this next level, but Brogdon is a player with, you know, some physical stature. He's strong. He doesn't turn the ball over, and it'll be interesting with Chris's injury. Does he get a little more chance to play? You still think that, hey, he's got a lot to learn. He's a rookie, but you never know. Sometimes rookies, you know, contribute or have to contribute more than you might think. Certainly a cerebral guy, really smart guy, and I think Bucks fans are going to like him. You know, second round picks, you never know. we've seen that with the Bucks all down the way, from Jody Meeks to, you know, of course Michael Redd was the second round pick, but there's much variety in how the second round picks will fare. But it seemed like a really solid pick. The Bucks had their eyes on him, and he's a hard worker, and you know, we'll see. But again, for those two guys, the impact might not be so much this year, but they're going to learn a lot. And we want to watch them in preseason. It's going to be interesting to see them then.
Yeah, I mean, talking about second-round picks, Chris Middleton was a second-round pick.
That's right. Chris was. I almost forgot about Chris. He was supposed to be a first-round pick, but he got hurt in college. And I've had scouts tell me that's the only reason.
And of course, in that 2012 draft, I mean, the second round was pretty good. Jay Crowder, Draymond Green, Chris Middleton. You know,
yeah,
you're looking
Draymond
at a bunch
Green,
of different
Jay
guys.
Crowder.
And of course, another guy who's on the Bucks preseason roster, training camp roster, Orlando Johnson, went one pick after Draymond Green and a couple picks before Chris Middleton. So you never know.
you never know. Orlando Johnson here in camp. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, that kind of, you know, wraps up that point. And now we'll just kind of close. You know, we always say we're going to try and keep this quick, but we never do. And so
we're going to have a 20-minute podcast sometime.
Someday, but today's not that day. So
okay.
let's finish off with a couple little, you know, I pulled out a couple things that we can kind of do over under and yes or
okay,
no
good.
Too.
Good.
So we'll start with, you know, we were just talking about Thon Maker, who I remember yesterday at Media Day, he was saying that he likes to hang around with Giannis, and he's in the weight room with him, and he's trying to do the same stuff as Giannis, and all the staff are like, hey, you don't need to do all the same stuff as Giannis. But he's trying to keep up, and, you know, I think it bodes well for his future that he's trying to keep up with Giannis. It's going to be really hard for him to keep up with, considering, you know, everything you hear about Giannis and the way he works. But then, so let's talk about the rookies. Thon Maker or Malcolm Brogdon, who you got playing more minutes this season?
I'd say Brogdon. Just because they might need some help now in the backcourt. Doesn't look like that would be the case as much in the frontcourt, although you never know. But when you think you got John Henson, Greg Monroe, Miles Plumlee, might be tough for Thon to get a lot of minutes. I'll say Brogdon.
Yeah, that was gonna be where I went to. Just, you know, for similar reasons, you know, you add in, you know, guys like Michael Beasley and Steve Novak, and they're playing more of the front court type positions, the three, mm-hmm. to four, you know, and so that takes away the opportunities for Thon, you know, and with Malcolm, he's going to need to, you know, he's counted on as one of their 3-point guards, basically. That's the way they've kind of discussed him at the start of training camp. And so, you know, he's one injury away from, you know, being a major factor, at least on the second unit. And yeah. So, you know, he has a defined role and a defined spot where he can play.
Is a more defined role, probably.
And he's also more seasoned. I mean, Thon is raw, yes. and has a much higher ceiling, but, you know, Malcolm Brogdon is closer to his ceiling, and he's shown that he can do a lot of things well, and he plays defense. Not that Thon doesn't play defense, because Thon was highly regarded for his defense in summer league, and even on Monday was saying that he went back and looked at film, and he was like, oh man, I want to go and play summer league again, because I wasn't even that good. Like, I could be better. Like,
now was funny. Right?
Now that I understand the system, I could be so much better.
I could have done better, yeah.
But Malcolm's learning curve, I think, will be a little bit shorter, because he, you know, had 5 years in college, learning under Tony Bennett, playing in a highly defensive system, where he you know, was known for being an impactful defensive player. So I think it'll be Brogdon, but over the course of time, you know, that doesn't mean that Thon is a bust, or Thon, you know, isn't as good as a second round pick or whatever that is.
You know, talking about this year.
He just takes time, just this year. You know,
and we could be wrong, but that's what we're saying.
Sure, sure. And, you know, it's kind of like a couple of years ago when Nate Walters got a lot of minutes, and you know, Giannis was getting minutes too. And
there you go. Know,
it's
remember not, that.
You know, everybody Nate
Walters was getting the minutes. There you go.
I mean, I'm looking now.
That might be a good comparison. you never know.
Yeah, Nate only played 2 minutes per game, fewer than Giannis. So, you know, just something to think about. So, okay, next question I have. Bucks over under 8.5 threes per game.
8.5 threes.
Last year they were last in the league with 5.4 a game.
I was going to say it was like 5, wasn't it?
Yeah, just for context.
I say over. I mean, if Chris was on the team, I'd definitely say over. I don't even think it'd be a contest, because Chris would be taking at least some. But you got Teletovich, you got, you know, Steve, if he plays, you've got Dellavedova, you know, Giannis is maybe not going to be so bashful every once in a while to take a three if he has one open. That's, you know, that's a big leap. It probably should be under, but I'm going to say over and be controversial. Maybe Teletovich should have 4 a game.
I see where you're going with that. I'm going to go with the under.
Yeah, the under's probably safer.
Yeah, sure. I think that they've made 3-point shooting an emphasis, you know, and they want to get better in that regard. But at the same time, I don't think that this will be the year that they really push Giannis.
Maybe around
Jabari
7.
And SW.
Thinking around 7. Yeah.
Well, 8.5 would put them around the midpoint of the league, at least what the league was last year. And
that
so,
should be a goal. That should be a goal, though. They need to get there.
Yeah, and I could see them getting to 7.5 or 8. I just think getting over 8.5 might be tough. You know, like I said, just because when you're starting a unit that really doesn't shoot 3-pointers that often, you know, or the main guys who are dominating the ball and dominating the scoring aren't big 3-point shooters. And granted, I was at that game in Boston near the end of last season where Giannis had like 4 threes in the first quarter or first half. You know, obviously he can do it, but it's not a big part of his game. I think they're probably a year away from
getting. No, I think you're
over
right.
8.5.
I might revise my
well,
I'll take the over just for the heck of it.
Okay, so next one we'll get to, and I had a tough time trying to figure out what number to put this at and what the expectation would be, but over under 0.5 All-Stars this season for the Bucks. Will they have one? Will they have zero? I thought about putting it at 1, but then you could do the cop out of saying, oh, I think they'll have 1, it'll be right on 1. So I figured I'd put it at a half person, and that way you have to pick a whole number.
Boy, you have to say, you know, based on history, what, 2004, Michael Redd, they're not going to have an All-Star. You know, there's a lot of talk, Giannis will be, but we all know how this goes, is that you have to have a winning team to have an all-star who isn't voted in by the fans. And that's just the reality. And the Bucks normally just don't, the coaches pick that, right? The Eastern Conference coaches. So Giannis or Jabari or someone, I take it those would be the two primary candidates, would have to just have an overwhelmingly successful first half of the season. I say no. I'd like to say the other. And I always say, hey, they're due. They're going to get one. How many times have I written stories about guys just missing the All-Star team? You know, Brandon Jennings, Andrew Bogut, you can go back. Brandon Knight. And of course, some guys were just devastated. Remember Brandon Jennings when he didn't get it? He just about, you know, it crushed him. So, it's been a sad, sordid history for the Bucks about this all-star representative, but I think it's the way the system is set up that, you know, if they were a winning team, there was a, Giannis yesterday said Chris could be an all-star. He said the sad thing is he was going to be an all-star this year. Now he's hurt. That was an interesting comment. So there's one of your prime candidates who's out of the picture. So I say no.
Well, I'm going to go the other direction. I'm going to say that they'll get one. I don't know who it'll be. I don't know if it'll be Giannis or Jabari. It'll be one of those two. But I think with Giannis playing the point guard, the ball's going to be in his hand, you know, a lot. He's going to have the ability to facilitate and do things that no one else can do in the league at his size and with his skill set. That, and especially with the Bucks, a lot of the first half of the season, if I remember correctly, they're at home. You know, and so, you know,
they have a better home schedule. Yeah.
So they might get off to a better start. He might be able to show some things and make an impact and at least put up big enough numbers or, you know, not maybe not huge individual numbers. He might not average like 20 points a game, but when you look at points and rebounds and, you know, assists and steals and all the different things that he can do, he might fill up enough of the stat sheet where it's hard to ignore him. You know, or Jabari, you know, he looks like he could be in a position to take a leap to kind of build on last season when he really balled out the last like quarter of the season and really showed what he could be as a foundational point. And so, you know, I think one of those guys at least could turn some heads and make a case, especially if the Bucks get off to a better than 500 start before the All-Star break or, you know, around the time that the voting is done.
That's the key part. They have to be a winning team or they won't get one. Or, you know, a team in the hunt a little bit around 500 or better, because if you're back there, then your players, you know, that's always a knock. They're like, well, he's having a great year, but his team stinks. You know, he's not getting in.
Oh, and the Bucks will have a bunch of games against the Cavs, so they'll be able to show, you know, what they've got before the All-Star game, you know, because obviously that's who's coaching the All-Star teams. So, you know, so we'll see, but I think this will be the year. Maybe it'll
the drought has to end sometime 2004. So what is that? 12 years now.
I'm starting to sound
it's
like
been
a Cubs.
A long time.
I'm starting to sound like a Cubs fan, like you, like, oh, maybe this will be the year, you know. But
hey.
Maybe it will be.
We're not talking about that until October. Yeah.
So then the last one I have is the over under for wins. 39.5, which is before the middle injury, which, you know, you and I both heard from different places that maybe that knocks their win total down by 2 or something like that. But it's interesting when you look at the Eastern Conference that the Eastern Conference isn't, they're not the Patsies anymore. I mean, you look, you know, obviously at the bottom, you have the Nets and the Sixers, but after that, almost every team in the Eastern Conference is projected, at least in the over-unders, at 36.5 or more. You know, and they're all jumbled up. I mean, it's really hard to figure out what to make of that middle to lower tier of the Eastern Conference.
I think that's the shame of the Middleton injury. There was such an opportunity there. You got Chicago's changed, Miami now doesn't have Wade or Bosch. You know, now you know that's a team that you know, be changed completely, really. You think they're, you know, they're making Hassan Whiteside the centerpiece of their new team, their younger team. You got the Wizards with a new coach, Scotty Brooks. You got the Knicks all changed up. So the Bucks, and the Bucks could still be in there. It's just the wonder if this just knocks them off stride so much. I think that's the big question that we're talking about. So you're saying 39.5 over or under.
And that was before the Middleton injury. What number do you think is fair after the Middleton injury?
Yeah, I would say a more fair number might be 37.
37 and a half?
Yeah, 37 and a half. I'll go with that. 37 and a half, I still say they'll be over that. I take the over on that. On 39 and a half, you're getting closer. 37 and a half, I'd take the over.
I think I'd probably do that too. And I think both of us took the over last year and looked like fools. So we'll see where we're at now.
Maybe better go under, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know,
figure they had 33 wins last year with that tough season, right? I mean, that was really a tough season.
I
expect them to be better. They had no bench. They had, you know, they should
no
be better. 33
shooter.
Wins. Should they be 4 wins better? Yeah, I think so. Should they be 500, 6 or 7 wins better? That might be a lot to ask. That, you know, there was talk, I was hearing some talk among the NBA experts and prognosticators saying, you know, Houston made it last year at 41 in the West. So, you know, it's not, the Bucks have made it before at 40 and 42 in the past seasons. So, you know, they made it at 41-41 in Jason Kidd's first year. So 41 wins might get you in the playoffs. So, if they can get to that, but again, that's a pretty big leap from 33. That's 8 more wins.
Yeah, like kind of you said, like if you told me to pick, you know, at 39.5, I'd probably be more inclined to say the under. I feel like they're probably 5 wins better this year, probably somewhere around 38, like right around that area.
Right? Yeah, 38.
but we'll see. You know, we'll see if that improved bench and added depth, you know, and you know actually, you know, parlays itself into wins, and we'll see what the injury situation looks like for the Bucks as well as other teams. Because I mean that plays a huge role in the landscape and which teams decide that they're going to pack it in and try and just play for next season and which trades could possibly take place, you know, heading into the season or at the All-Star break. I mean there are plenty of things that could still happen, but right now I like the Bucks for somewhere around 38. I think that's probably where they could be, and maybe should be, considering the Middleton injury. I think I probably would have taken the over, had them over 40 if it weren't for the Middleton injury.
With Chris, yeah.
Right, yeah, but that definitely changes things, and we'll see, because the Eastern Conference, like I said, it's just a hodgepodge of teams that are kind of all grouped kind of around the same level, or at least perceived to be at the same level. And the question is which ones rise and which ones fall.
I think one team that is really going to be good is Boston. You know, they have Horford now. You know, some people are saying they're a clear number two team, and they might be. They have, you know, Horford coming in. They've got their guards. They got Isaiah Thomas. They made some great moves. They got Crowder. You know, they were already playing very well. They got one of the best coaches in the league, Brad Stevens. They may be elevating themselves out of that kind of middle or that group of players. I would say they definitely have. And, you know, Atlanta, now they have Dwight Howard coming in. They lost Horford. Maybe they dropped down a little. Maybe, you know, Chicago didn't make the playoffs last year. Now they have Dwayne Wade. You know, where are they going? Are they going back up? But now they're without Gasol, without Noah. You know, certainly a huge change for Chicago. How are they going to look?
I mean, every team, after, I'd say, Cleveland, Boston, and Toronto in the Eastern Conference.
Toronto. And those three are the top.
I have very little idea for how they'll be organized after that until you get to Philadelphia and Brooklyn, which will be at the bottom. Everything else is up in the air.
Let's talk about that for one of the next podcasts or one in October before the preseason. Matt, that's a good one. Let's have the question and we'll say, what are 4 through 8? We're going to have to rank them.
Oh, gosh. That's going to be tough. Ah. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Now we've taken up way too much of everybody's time. Thank you to all of you who made it to the end of the podcast. We're hoping to keep them a little bit shorter than this in the future, but since we had so much of a backlog of things to talk about, you know, obviously this is a little bit of a longer one, but we're glad to be back. We'll try and keep the podcast coming as regularly as we possibly can the fall gets going. Obviously, we have Bucks preseason, and then I'm helping cover UW football, and we got Marquette hoops coming up, and lots of things going on. But we'll try and keep the Bucks podcast flowing, and keep getting them out to you at least semi-regular intervals.
We'll definitely do another one here in the preseason and talk about what's going on in the preseason. Probably in a couple weeks here, we can really get a read on, you know, what some of these young players are doing and talk about that. That'll be great. And then obviously we will want to kick off the season in late October and have some predictions.
Which
we don't get right most of the time, but we'll try.
We'll try our best. So thanks again for following along with the podcast. For those of you who are new to following along, thank you. You can find our podcast at jsonline.com/bucks whenever a new one is posted. If you don't want to have to go searching for it, you can subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher, and that way, whenever we put out a podcast, it'll automatically get uploaded to your device, whatever device that might be, and you can get the latest one very quickly and easily and just listen to us on the go. So thanks a lot for following along, and we can't wait to have another one for you soon.